Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Now, there have been another 24 hours of relentless military operations from air, sea and land on the Gaza Strip, with new evacuation orders issued just yesterday to people in Deir al-Bala in middle Gaza. This follows 2 weeks of repeated displacement orders right across southern, middle and northern Gaza, telling civilians to evacuate immediately, many of them on their third or fourth evacuation order. For the latest, I'm joined from Nusrat in the middle of Gaza by UNRWA spokesperson Louise Wateridge. Louise, you're very welcome back to the programme. Can you tell me about the latest displacement orders and their impact then on the people?
Yeah, I mean, the situation on the ground here is nothing but catastrophic. Day in and day out, families are being forced from place to place, all while surrounded by tanks, bombs and strikes. The military action here has been relentless. For 2 weeks, you know, as you just said, land, sea, and air, every direction you look, we're in the middle area. It's just continuous bombing and strikes. People are terrified. There is constant fear. The area of Mawasi, which is the so-called humanitarian area, there's around 30,000 people living per 1 kilometer square. It's just unbelievable when you see images. You know, we're trying to share images and videos as much as possible from the ground because you can't even see the floor anymore. You can't even see the sand. These people have been packed in, and somebody even told us, you know, there's nowhere else for us to go but the sea. That is the only way to describe how things are right now.
How many people living in that 1 square kilometer that you told me?
30,000 people per 1 square kilometer.
Wow.
30, yeah.
So in that context, which is why I'm asking you to underline it, it's so easy, Louise, to understand how disease can spread so rapidly.
Yeah, exactly that. So we've had summer, you know, we're in the end of August now. People have been surviving on between 1 to 3 liters of drinking water a day. And the conditions are just awful. They're awful. Because of the continued displacement, the humanitarian response becomes more and more difficult by the day. The facilities that people can get water from are either bombed or destroyed, or they are deemed in an area that people have to leave and evacuate from. So it's this continuous cycle of people just trying to survive. But, you know, we have reports of snake bites, of scorpions, of people living among cockroaches and rats and mice, all these kinds of animals that spread diseases. So it's absolutely no surprise to us 10 months into this war, you know, we've had the first confirmed case of polio now in a 10-month-old child who's lost, you know, they've lost ability in their left leg. They've been paralyzed in their left leg. And now it's a race against time to try and do a vaccination campaign against polio here.
Yeah, which would be easy for me to say, does that strike the fear of God into people? But I mean, is it just one more misery on top of so many others that are, I mean, really and truly, is it the case, given what you've described, Louise, that people there are just wondering if they'll survive day to day?
When I speak to my colleagues and my friends, it's the hardest part. In the morning, we send a text every morning to each other in our group chat and just check if everyone's still alive. Just a couple of days ago, one of my colleagues, Ashraf, the place, the accommodation next to him was bombed. Some of his family was killed. And this is the only option we have. This is the only option that they have. They tell me they're just sitting and waiting to die. There's nowhere else to go. My friend Muna, she is in Deir al-Bala. She says, well, where am I going to go? There's nowhere to go. You see images of people packed as far as the sea comes in. They're building, you know, perimeters of sand to stop the water coming into their plastic sheeting and their shelters. So there's nowhere to go. So they just have to sit and wait and hope that they stay alive with their families. And the best case scenario they're hoping for, they tell me, is that if we are killed, we are killed together. So nobody's left behind. That's the reality here.
My goodness. That brings to mind a story an Irish Palestinian told us on this programme, where they feared death. They heard bombing and it was nighttime. They huddled in bed together.
Yes.
For that very reason. When I read of evacuation orders, Louise, how does it impact on the work of UNRWA? What happens to your operation?
I mean, every day is a new challenge here, really. I know we keep saying it. I know people are tired of hearing it. But, just yesterday, the area of Deir al-Balah that was ordered to evacuate, UN workers are in there. We've lost some of our facilities. We're losing health facilities. We're using water facilities. Even some of the guest houses that the UN are sleeping in, they're no longer there. We have humanitarian sheltering in our accommodation now, which is outside of this evacuation zone. So how on earth can we be expected to run a response for 2.2 million people when even the humanitarians don't have access to their own facilities? Just over the weekend, our director, Scott Anderson, he was, coordinating with OCHA to try and get to families trapped under the rubble. This is in Hamad City. This is in Khan Yunis. Families trapped under the rubble. We're not given access to get to them. And when you are with these, families, when you are in these areas where the buildings have come down on people, what materials, what machinery is available to get them out? People are digging people out with their hands. No materials are allowed in. No equipment is allowed in to help these people, and people are dying from this. People that could be saved. There were children this weekend that could have been saved if humanitarians and first responders were given access, if there was equipment available to them, they could have been saved, and they were not. And that's beyond frustrating. It's beyond frustrating. It's impossible when we can do so much more. There's so much more that we can do here and we are able to do here, but we are being displaced with the population themselves.
And the Hezbollah-Israel escalation over the weekend must have been extremely frightening. But can I ask you, though, does anyone there that you talk to, do they hold out much hope for the ceasefire talks, realistically?
I mean, there's realistically and then there's Gaza. Nothing in Gaza is realistic at the moment. Nothing is normal. Everything is unprecedented. Even when you're just moving around here, what you're seeing on a daily basis, you can't even comprehend. So when it comes to realistic, I think people, when they talk to me about the ceasefire, they know realistically those conversations have ended. They know that the hope has dwindled, but it's all the hope they have. So it's all they've got to hold on for. The people that speak to me, they just want this to end, and it's the only way it will. It needs to ceasefire. You need the hostages to go home. We've got people who have been held hostage here for 10 months. They also need to go home. And a ceasefire for everybody.
I just before we conclude, I remember at the very start when evacuation orders were given for people in the north of Gaza to move to the south. That was the very start. And there was outrage, people asking where they would go and so on. But I mentioned there, Louise, that people are now on multiple evacuation orders. And I just wonder if you know, of Gaza's 2.3 million people, how many have been internally displaced since last October?
Our most up-to-date estimate is 1.9 million people. So that is the fair majority of the Gaza population. The entire population has been displaced. Now, many people you speak to, they've not just moved once. They've moved repeatedly. There was a woman we spoke to in Nasser Hospital. She just had her son killed in a strike. And she was crying and screaming at us because she had been displaced from Gaza City. She'd been displaced to the middle area. Then she told us and screamed at us. They told us to go to Rafah for safety. Then they told us to go to Mawasi for safety. Now my son is dead and my daughter is paralyzed. So people you speak to here, they've been displaced over and over again, and they're just exhausted. Just exhausted.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We really appreciate your time. UNRWA spokesperson Louise Wateridge in Nusayrat in Gaza.